Tango Tango Papa 1948, February 19, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Lebanon, Tennessee. So, I don't remember where I was. It's been, what, about 3 or 4 days ago when I recorded the last podcast. So, in the meantime, let's see, I've been to Houston. And then I picked a load up in near Houston in the one of the suburbs, and then that load, at first it was just, it was going to be going to Murfreesboro, which is near Nashville. The whole thing was supposed to go to Murfreesboro, but then after I got there, they decided to, they added another drop. And so the first drop went to Murfreesboro, and then the second drop goes to Morristown, Tennessee. So I went to Murfreesboro this evening, and even though the appointment was supposed to be at 7 a.m. in the morning, they went ahead and immediately unloaded it. And so I still had time left, and so I could have driven farther, but I went ahead and stopped here at Lebanon, which is just somewhat east of Nashville, not very far. So I stopped here, found a place to park, and I'll just kind of hang out here. I believe the appointment they changed the appointment that they got for the final drop in Morristown, Tennessee, is 9 o'clock tomorrow, which is actually now today, 9 p.m. So Friday at 9 p.m. So that's, and what is that? The GPS says 207 miles from here. Right now, as I say, I'm in Lebanon, Tennessee. So I'll leave here, unless I find out that they might take it earlier. I'll leave here so that I get there by 9 p.m. or probably by 8 p.m. just to give myself a little extra time, because I do have to drive through the Knoxville area. Leave there in time to get there, and but they might take it earlier. I can find that out. But in any case, I'm at this. There's this truck stop. It's called Uncle Pete's Truck Stop, and it's an old truck stop. It's been here for years. They don't keep it open at night anymore. They close about, I think they close around 10 o'clock, and then they open up at maybe 6 o'clock in the morning or something like that. But they have pretty decent food. They've got a restaurant in there, and the restaurant actually has a pretty decent kind of home-cooked style food. And so I figured I would just stop here, and because I could have gone on over towards Knoxville. There's a company, we have a company yard that is just west of Knoxville at Lenoir City, Tennessee, and I could park there if I had to, because a lot of the truck stops are busy at night. This one is busy, but there was one place that I could that was still open that I could park in, so I was able to park here. Otherwise, I would have just gone on probably. But if I went over to Lenoir City to the company yard, that's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Really, there's no food around within walking distance. I think they have some vending machines in there, but just as easy to, you know, be able to eat here and, you know, probably have lunch here, depending on how, and kind of hang out. And as I say, leave here in time so that I can get over there by 9 p.m. if they end up making me adhere to the appointment time. So, but weather was pretty nice today. Was, of course, when I was down in Houston, it was 80 degrees. And it was it got cool at night. It was that one night when I was down there, it was in the 40s. It got like 42 degrees the first night. I was north of Houston, and then in Houston it was a little warmer. I think it got a, you know, low 50s. And now today it warmed up in a much broader area. So it was as I was coming across Arkansas, I think around the Memphis area, it was around, I think I saw as high as 70 or 71 degrees. And I think that happened at home. It got up into the 70s, somebody was telling me, but I guess it was super, super windy at home. Now, it really wasn't that windy where, at least in eastern Arkansas or Tennessee, the parts of Tennessee that I was in, there was a little bit of a breeze blowing, but not bad. So, and then this evening, I think, I don't know what the temperature, I guess I can look on my phone here. So I'll bring up Google. Local weather.
It's 52 degrees and clear in Lebanon.
So it says it's 52. I have the heat on in here in the truck, but it's, I don't know, I'm starting to sweat a little bit, so I think I'm going to flip it over to air conditioning. I don't know what the humidity is. Don't have any idea. The humidity might be a little higher, and that the humidity can end up kind of playing into how warm it feels, or, and the reason it does that is because of the it has to do with, I don't know, more or less how quickly the higher the humidity, the evaporation process that the body uses to regulate temperature is not as efficient. And so that's, you know, if there's any heat buildup, then you start to sweat. Now I'm sweating, I would be sweating anyway, but if it's less efficient, you know, in other words, if the humidity's higher, then I'm going to notice the sweat's going to begin to start to accumulate. So it just doesn't work as well. So generally speaking, the drier, you know, if you're in a drier air, if the humidity's lower, then the sweating process is more efficient. So it looks like somebody's pulling in beside me. I hope there's, I tried to get as straight as possible, so hopefully he can get in. There's a spot on either side, so hopefully he's able to get in there. So I don't like watching other trucks maneuver. That's it's nerve-wracking, you know, because for one thing, you know, is looking off in the distance, it's hard to judge distances, you know, once you get past a certain point. Now, I guess he gave up on that. Once you pass a certain point, it's just really difficult. Like, if I look in my mirror and I'm backing up to something, it's really hard to judge how far I am away from whatever it is that I'm backing up towards. And so similarly, if I'm watching a truck off in the distance try to back into something, or back in beside something, or let's say they're backing into a dock or whatever, or backing in between trucks, it's just kind of nerve-wracking to watch them. You know, are they going to hit or not? You know, because you can't really tell. So I guess he must have gave up. So anyway, I've got about a 2-minute piece of audio feedback from Mike that he sent me, I guess, a couple of days ago. So I'm going to go ahead and play that. So here is Mike.
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Hope you're doing well. Sorry it's taken a couple of months to contribute a little bit more to your podcast. It's been probably since December since I did. I think it's more of a lack of just trying to figure out what might be relevant content to pass along to you that, you know, would be worthy of you mentioning in your podcast. So one thing my wife and I were thinking about a couple of days ago when we were batting around some ideas that I could send along to you was about people who back into parking spaces. For the last few years, we've kind of, we work together and we chuckle, you know, at certain people who pull into the office park where we are, and we just pull right into our space, and you see other people who day after day after day just feel like they've got to back into their spot, and it you'll see them take two or three times just to position themselves just right to back in, and then they'll pull up and they'll back in again just to get in between the lines. And every once in a while, we just, you know, ask somebody at work, why do you back in? Because we're just kind of curious. And we'll usually hear something like, well, it's safer when I leave. And then I think to myself, well, but at the same time, it's more dangerous when you're backing in. You got to back in, you got to pull out. So you're kind of making the same maneuvers. It's just when you do it. Anyway, never really could figure out why some people habitually back into parking spaces and some people feel fine just to pull into parking spaces. So I didn't know if you had any comments on that. You're out on the road all the time. You interact with a lot of people, and you've probably come across this subject before. So I'd be interested in, both my wife and I would be interested in seeing what you feel about that. Take care, Tom. Hope you're doing well. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, so why do people sometimes back into parking spots? And what we're talking about is cars, I think, backing into parking spots. Cars, pickups, trucks generally. If you see trucks almost always, most of the time, back into parking spots. The majority of trucks that you see are going to be backed into parking spots. Sometimes, you know, trucks will pull into parking spots. It just depends. It is easier to, usually it's easier to pull in, you know, if we're talking about trucks, it's easy to pull into a parking spot sometimes, and it can be very difficult to get back out, sort of depending on how many trucks are around. So if, for example, if it's easier to just go ahead and back into a parking spot, if now we're talking about a big truck, it's easier to back into a parking spot. Or it might be harder to back into the parking spot. But on the other hand, it's going to be easier whenever the truck leaves, especially if there's other trucks that have crowded in around. Then it's going to be much easier to leave, because if you were pulled into a parking spot, and then a bunch of other trucks came, that were parked across, then it would be much more difficult. It would be very difficult to back out in certain circumstances. Now, as far as cars and pickups, and I think that's really what you're talking about. Cars, I could see where I think what causes this, and sometimes I, in my pickup, sometimes I will back into a parking spot, because I do that sometimes. I don't always do it, but I do it sometimes in my own pickup. And the reason that I do is because my pickup is it's a big. It's an F-150, and the thing's pretty big. And a lot of the parking spots, they make the parking spots, they're really kind of small. I don't know if they're trying to cram in as many vehicles as they can usually, probably. And so they make the parking spots, they're a little smallish. And so there are times when it's just easier to back a, if you got a like a full size pickup, it's just easier to back into the parking spot, even though you might have to, you know, I might have to pull forward a time or two. It's easier to back into the parking spot than it is to try to pull into the parking spot, because that can be, you know, if they don't allow enough room in their parking lot, that can be a pain in the rear trying to, you know, pull in there and get straight. Because then there are times when even if I pull into a parking spot with my pickup, that I might have to back up and you know, pull forward just to get back, you know, to make sure that I'm within the lines. Otherwise, I'm going to be at a little angle and cause someone else some problem. So it just, so I think that's probably one of the reasons. Now, some people may just inherently decide that, you know, it's a quicker getaway. You know, because there are people, I know what you're talking about, like in, let's say it's like an office parking or something, that type of parking where someone parks for the day while they're at work. And then, so, and I've seen people, well, they'll like back up next to a fence. And then whenever they go out back to their car, and maybe there's some other vehicles that are beside their vehicle, but they're backed up to the fence and there's nothing really in front of them, so they could just as easily pull in and then back out, and then they wouldn't really have to worry about what's behind them. But they go ahead and back in, and I think it psychologically just makes for a faster getaway. And I've noticed that the times where I have had a job that gets off at a specific time, and I've noticed this myself. You know, the last time I had a job like that was when I was a network administrator, computer network administrator at the eye clinic, and that's been way back in the early 2000s at this point. I noticed that whenever 5 o'clock would roll around, I would feel this really kind of an irrational, if you think about it, sort of an irrational need to, you know, just get away from there, get out of there at 5 o'clock. You know, it's 5 o'clock, time to go, let's leave. And yeah, hurry home, or hurry out of there. You know, and what are you hurrying for? You know, what's the race? So, you know, and it's almost like people are escaping from their job, or escaping from something. I don't know, and what they're escaping to, but that's probably psychologically they think, well, it's a sort of a faster getaway. Let's say you just have a compact car, you got a really compact car, and it, you know, it's easy to go in the parking spots. Well, you know, some people will still back those in. And I think in those cases, it's just psychologically easy. They, you know, it makes for a faster getaway, I think, is what probably the real, if you're going to psychoanalyze them. But with a pickup or a large SUV, it actually is easier in many cases just to go ahead and back in to the parking spot. Because a large pickup or an SUV is actually a little bit more maneuverable if you can, in the case where the rear wheels are fixed and the front wheels are the ones that move, the ones that can turn, it's inherently easier to back into a narrow spot. If you're backing in, you know, if you get a large vehicle like that, versus if you have a smaller vehicle and you can just pull in. Like I say, some of the parking lots and restaurants or offices or shopping centers, sometimes they're just small. It's like they've really try to cram as many vehicles as possible. Now, angular parking, like you go to, let's say you go to a shopping center, and they, you know, like Walmart would be a good example, where they've got, usually in the parking lot, they've set it up so that it's angular parking. You generally, people don't try to back into those, because the angular parking, you just kind of turn a little bit and you're able to get even larger vehicles usually, unless somebody's parked wrong. Those are easier to pull into. Where you know, the more difficult ones are the ones where everything's perpendicular, and then if they don't allow enough room in between the rows of vehicles, that's where you kind of get the phenomena where people think, well, I'm going to back in. So, you know, with a pickup or an SUV. So, I think that's where, especially you're going to see people back in if there's a curb that's, or up to a fence. That's where I commonly see it at. So, I think that's it. And then, but I think otherwise, psychologically, it just makes for a faster getaway, especially if people are at work and they inherently back up to the same parking spot, or, you know, if they're in the same parking spot all the time, that's why they do it. I think because it's just kind of a, you know, they're going to be able to leave quicker. You know, and they don't have to think about it as much. So, anyway, thank you, Mike, for the audio comment. And as I said before, and this applies to everybody, if you want more podcasts from me, I need feedback. I've spent a lot of time. You know, this is 1,948. So there's been 1,947 podcasts before it, that plus a bunch of other ones that were kind of mixed in that weren't part of this podcast. That you know, a good portion of those I spent to a large extent kind of talking about. You know, at least my sense of how the world works, and kind of what's wrong with the world, and what's wrong with people. And I don't know. I still enjoy talking about those things, but I've kind of gotten to the point where I feel like I've kind of said it all multiple times, and I know some people like to hear it, and I have to admit I do enjoy talking about it, but at the same time, you know, I kind of wonder, am I talking to a wall? So gotta have, it works a whole lot better if there's interaction and there's feedback, you know. And of course, you have the thing with the radio. People on the radio get, you know, they're live and they've got interaction. But, or you could, in the case there, you can do live broadcasting on the internet. But the problem with that, you know, you can get some live feedback. But then the problem with traditional radio or even internet radio is typically that there are, they have all these advertisements. You have these constant, you know, they're breaking for an advertisement. And the problem, I don't like that. I want, you know, I don't want to, you know, if you get a good discussion going, the idea that you're going to keep breaking every few minutes for, so you can insert an ad, is for, you know, a break for an ad, ends up detracting from the ability to have a conversation, or it really ends up detracting from the ability to make cogent points. There's been plenty of times where I've, you know, especially when I used to listen to traditional radio, you know, you get somebody to really be starting to make a point. Oh, it's time for a break. And then whenever they come back, of course, the point's gone and, you know, they move off onto something else. And that's really, you know, I find that very irritating. And for that reason alone, even if I had the opportunity to do radio, which, and I kind of have had a little bit, that's one reason I've never pursued it, is because, just because of that. I like the podcast, and I have to be motivated to do it, like podcasting, and I have to be motivated, and the ads, you know, the idea that you're going to break for ads every few minutes, sorry, don't want to, you know, don't care to do that. But on the other hand, it would be nice to have, and it is nice to have interaction. So it's kind of a catch-22. So I don't know, at some point in the future, let's say that Social Security doesn't collapse. And let's say that at some, 5 years from now, when I'm 66 plus 2 months, I decide, hey, I'm going to retire. And at that point, it is possible that, I could end up doing some kind of internet radio. I could see that would be a possibility, you know, depending, because there are different platforms that don't necessarily involve ads or breaking for ads, where it's possible to do kind of live broadcasting on the internet and have actual live interaction. And something like that, I think I would enjoy that. I don't know. Now, if it was something that I had to do every day, let's say it was on a schedule, don't know how I would react to that, if I would really like that or not. You know, of course, you know, in order to build any kind of an audience, on the other hand, you need to have something regular, you know, so the more regular something is, the better it is, I think. So it's, I don't know. We'll just, but that's a bridge that, I'll cross perhaps at some point in the future. But in the meantime, I'm going to continue. I have, you know, it would be easy for me to simply say, I'm going to discontinue this. I'm, you know, it's just, why bother with it? But I still enjoy doing it, and as long as I can get interaction, then the interaction is going to help me, kind of help motivate me to continue with it. But on the other hand, if there's less interaction, then I'll continue to podcast when I feel motivated to do it, but it's not going to be as frequently. So but it's all about the motivation, and it's all about me being, kind of motivated to do it. And when I do it, I enjoy it. It's not something that, it's not that I'm not enjoying it. But on the other hand, I'm not allowing it. At one time, for a long time, I was allowing podcasting to kind of take quite a bite out of my sleep, and so I would spend hours and hours podcasting. There was a time where I was doing it virtually every day, and it was eating into the time that I should have really been sleeping. At this point, I'm not doing that anymore. If I if I don't have time to do it, then I'm not going to do it. If there's no time, if I should be sleeping, then that's what I'm going to be doing, as opposed to, you know, spending time with, you know, making a podcast. So anyway, if you, you know, follow the news, which I really don't, I look at headlines, and it seems like things just keep ratcheting up and ratcheting up and ratcheting up, and you know, you wonder what's, you know, when is the pot going to boil? You know, what is going to happen? Now, there are people that I respect that are saying that we're very close to some sort of a civil war, either a world war and or a civil war. And, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, and I really don't try to prognosticate those things. Don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next, really. But things do seem to be ratcheting up. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are in, you know, what do you do? How do you handle that? There are people that are committing suicide because of, you know, they feel like they're under all this pressure, and, you know, they end up committing suicide, or they you know, they use that as an excuse to you know, kind of engage in bad behavior, drinking, you know, or any number of things. They sort of use the extra stress as sort of a convenient excuse. So how do you survive that? What do you do? How do you avoid being poisoned by the people around you? And it's really the stress that people, you know, people feel is really the source of it. What is the source of it? Why should you feel stressed? If the people around you, their minds are poisoned, objectively, why should your mind become poisoned as well? You know, and I don't, you know, of course, people do get poisoned that way all the time, but I contend that that's not, it's not normal. It's not, a human being should not be the ideal, and I'm talking about the ideal human, you know, the ideal situation for a human being, should not be sort of picking up, or sort of by osmosis, absorbing the poison from the people around them. You should be able to exist, even if it's a poisoned environment, and I'm talking about, you know, kind of socially poisoned. You should be able to exist in a socially poisoned environment, ideally, without picking up the poison yourself. So how do you do that? How do you avoid being contaminated, picking up the contamination from the people around you? And of course, the answer to that is extremely simple. It's so simple, in fact, that people will dismiss it. people often dismiss it as, oh, that's just too simplistic. Can't be that simple. And the answer is very simple, as I say. And there's a line in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. There's that line in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. And that is a profound, it's not just words, but that's a profound statement. And if you can find out, if you can understand deeply what those words mean, be still and know that I am God. If you can understand what those eight words mean on a very deep level, the deepest of levels, and put that into practice, then it becomes possible to, no matter what kind of environment, a social environment, poison, you know, socially poisoned environment you find yourself in, it becomes possible to not absorb the poison. Those poisoned people will bump into you, you know, and they'll, it's like they're bumping into a brick wall. And the interesting thing is that if you're really practicing that, if you're really in that, in the presence, and it's really a presence, you're in the presence of your Creator. There's, it's no, no secret. You know, if you can learn to be still, and it's a special way of being still, but if you can learn to be still and kind of make peace with your Creator, then it becomes, it's sort of like having, if you're healthy, you don't know that you're healthy, you don't feel healthy, but you sure know if you get sick or if something, you break a bone or something happens to your health, then you know that you're unhealthy, but if you're healthy, you don't know it. And so in the same sense, if you're really in the presence of your Creator, it's not an emotional feeling. There's no emotional feeling involved with it. It's just, it's words sort of fail it, but it's just sort of, and it's going to sound cliche, but it's kind of a sense of peace. It's a relationship that cannot be penetrated by outside pressure. So, you know, the people kind of bump into you and you don't feel anything. Somebody comes along and tries to upset me, in other words. Or they're upset and then they kind of come along and then, and I don't get upset. They've kind of bumped into me and I don't feel anything. But they feel something, you know, and it's like they've bumped into something. Well, what have I bumped into? What is this? And they may even try, something in them tries harder to get you to become upset. But if you can really understand what that, those eight words mean, be still and know that I am God. There's a very special way of being still on my website. If you go to truckertompodcast.com, up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. I have about, I think, four or five files, MP3 files, hosted right on my site. You can right-click on them and download them, you know, burn them to CD, put them on your MP3 player, put them on your phone. However you want to do it, listen to them on your computer, stream them on your computer. But that's a very simple, it'll teach you this very, very simple meditation technique. And it's just, it's a simple way of learning to come out, bring your point of awareness. We have this point of awareness. We can really only be aware of one thing at a time. And bring that out of your thoughts into the present moment. And that's where your creator is. Your creator is in the present moment. That's where God is. It's not in the past, not in the future, in the present moment. And out of this present moment, if you really understand, what is it that gives birth to matter? This matter that makes up our bodies and makes up our world. That's our creator is behind that. And by the same token, our creator is the that same energy, that same force, the same spirit gives birth to our awareness. And therefore, we're able to be aware. Aware not only of our own existence, but aware of the presence of the Creator. Now, these may sound like, you know, kind of like flowery words, but after all, words are the only thing I have to communicate with. But if you can practice the simple art of, you know, the simple exercise of just learning to be still, of learning to be in the present moment, you know, and if you find that you know, thought kind of pulls you away, you just become aware that the thought has kind of pulled you away. Something's pulled you away. You've got lost in thought again. Bring your attention back to the present moment. The meditation isn't a cure. The meditation can bring you to a state of that's where the, you know, to the present moment, where the presence is, the presence of your creator is. And this isn't some, well, I'm going to believe in it or whatever kind of thing that you're, that, you know, sort of fantasy that you're making up. There is a creator. And it's up to each one of us to find that creator. But you got to really want to. So if you can be in the present moment, learn to exist in the present moment, the Creator and it's really sort of with your permission, creator sort of, you know, takes over. You know, and that is a really very imperfect description. It doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that you're never going to make mistakes. But what it does mean is that it removes all anxiety. Removes all anxiety about, well, you know, I have a limited lifespan. Removes anxiety about what's going to happen tomorrow. Removes anxiety about what happened, you know, what's going to happen an hour from now or maybe 5 minutes from now. And it also removes anxiety about what has happened in the past. Although, you have to be able to face what's happened in the past. And you have to be able to face the, you know, face, instead of running away, finding distractions, you have to be able to want to know the truth and see the truth about, you know, what you've done. Whatever it is, however you failed. But if you can ever, you know, face that fairly and squarely, then you're done with it. But if you won't face it, and you kind of lie to yourself, I'm a good person, and you get other people to agree with you that you're a good person, you're lying to yourself, and you're demanding lies from the people around you, and the community around you, and the nation around you, and you vote for liars. You demand lying politicians, people that love you, or that they pretend to love you, tell you how wonderful you are. They're lying. So if you can find that presence, it's worth the time. I promise you, it's worth the time learning how to meditate. Learn how to use that simple exercise. Now, I can't promise it's going to help everybody. I do believe that it will help most people, and if you find that it helps you, it's up to you to continue with it. You know, doing it one time doesn't cut it. You have to be sincere. You have to be looking for your Creator. You have to, what you're really looking for is the presence of your Creator. Now, is everybody looking for that? Probably not. But if you're still listening to me, then you probably, I'd say there's a good chance you probably are. You probably are one of those people that's really looking. But it's absolutely worth pursuing. So that's on my website. Give it a try. As I say, can't promise it's going to help everybody, but if you will really try and kind of impose a little discipline on yourself and do it, it can end up having a profound impact on your sense of well-being. And so then it becomes possible to live in an absolutely chaotic world that's growing more chaotic by the day, and yet not be affected by it, not be penetrated by it. Not be in a state of upset because of it. And it becomes possible to live in, exist in situations that some people would find just absolutely intolerable. Externalized people would find intolerable, and end up having a sense of just perfect well-being. And what is happiness? What is it? Is it an emotion? No. How do you know if you're happy? You don't. It's like health. It's if you have it, you don't really know that you have it until it's missing. Till someone tricks you and robs you of it, then you know what unhappiness is. But you know happiness is one of those things. It's not an emotion. If you think that you can buy this or buy that and you're going to be happy, that it doesn't work that way. Or marry this person or eat this food or whatever it is. That's not going to make you, that's not it. It's not an emotion. It's not a feeling. So, anyway, bringing this to a close, get headed to bed. Hope everyone has had a great week. Hope you have a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.